today, Australia and China's iron embrace. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Australia has a significant trade relationship with China, and in fact, China is Australia's biggest trading partner for both the exports and imports of goods. In 2019-20, 39% of all goods exported from Australia went to China, while 27% of all goods imported were from China. And that was worth around $150 billion in exports, way ahead of Japan at $52 billion and South Korea at $25 billion, whereas India was just over $10 billion, the US $17 billion, and the UK at $15 billion. On the import side, China dominated at $80 billion, followed by the USA at $36 billion, and Japan at $19 billion, all according to the ABS and, of course, in Aussie dollars. So China is worth around $80 billion net to Australia. And recent years have seen significant growth in trade between Australia and China. The value of goods exported doubled in the 5 years 2019-20 from $75 billion in 2014-15 to $150 billion in 2019-20, and imports grew 42% over the same period. These increases followed the signing of the China-Australia Free Trade Agreement, which came into force in December 2015. The overall value and growth in goods exported to China in recent years has been driven by exports of resource commodities, in particular iron ore and coal. In 2019-20, exports of iron ore accounted for 56% of all Australian goods exported to China and was a significant driver of the increase in exports between 2014 and 2020. Since the commencement of the Free Trade Agreement, there has been significant increases in exports of other products, including meat, particular beef, medical and pharmaceutical products, and beverages, in particular red wine. Although, of course, that is changing now. Australian exports of goods to China at the beginning of 2020 were subdued, down 17% and 12% in January and February 2020, respectively, with declines in exports of iron ore in line with supply disruptions caused by Cyclone Damien. But from March 2020, exports to China rebounded to $12.7 billion, up 32% on February, predominantly driven by exports of iron ore. Exports to China remained strong across April, May and June, with record high iron exports to China in June 2020, which added to the second highest export of goods to China on record. Off the back of June, July exports declined, down 17%, with declines in exports of iron ore and coal, and year-on-year exports to China in July 2020 were down 16%. And metal ore exports rose to $13.9 billion in October, which is a historic high. Other ores rebounded in the month as well, up $0.6 billion, off from a soft result in September. Iron ore earnings were valued at around $11.3 billion in October, eclipsing the July 2019 high of about $9.8 billion. And notably, of course, the iron ore spot price was elevated to $120 a ton then. And overall, in seasonally adjusted terms, the balance on goods and services was a surplus of $5 billion in November, a decrease of $1.5 billion on the surplus in October. But since then, of course, the iron ore price has gone absolutely nuts. It's currently sitting up at around $170 a ton. But more recently, as the China relationship has soured with Australia, coal, seafood, wine, and other exports have all been blocked, yet iron ore supply continues unabated. So, what happens to iron ore is of strategic significance to both China and Australia. Now, there was an important article in the South China Morning Post which discussed, in the context of the China-Australia relationship, whether they could break free of dependency on Australian iron ore, the status of China's interest in overseas mines, and a potential focus on the option of diversifying China's iron ore supply using scrap metals. The article was published by Su Lan Tam on the 13th of January 2021, and it's worth going through it. Analysts say now is the time for China to start diversifying its iron ore supply away from Australia, including to places such as Brazil and West Africa. But with limited alternatives to choose from in the short term, relying on iron ore from down under looks to remain China's best option. Brazilian port operator Grupo Para Multimodal's executive director Paulo Salvador knows there is plenty of untapped high-grade iron ore in northern Brazil, but a mix of bureaucracy and limited capital has stymied efforts to begin production for years. Across the states of Para, Piauí, and Tocantins, there are at least three mines amounting to nearly 10 billion tons of iron ore reserves ready for production, but they continue to sit idle, he said, adding that these deposits are only the tip of the iron ore iceberg in Brazil. With commercial will and financial resources, however, enough iron ore could be produced from these mines to rebalance the market that is seeing record high iron ore prices and to satisfy China's demand for the metal, according to Salvador. There are plenty of raw materials to go around, but the key is extracting them, he said. Late last year, iron ore prices reached nearly $180 a ton, a high not seen since 2011 during the post-credit crisis recovery. In contrast, when China weathered an economic downturn in 2015, iron ore prices sank to as low as $38 a ton. Given the overlap of China's intensifying political conflict with Australia, now in its 9th month, and Beijing's goal to reduce carbon emissions in the coal-dependent steel sector in the face of its climate targets, Salvador says now is the time for China to diversify its iron ore supply. The fact that there are no Chinese investors in mineral exploration in Brazil, in my view, is not related to any barrier, but because until now they have not felt this need, he said. For years, the iron ore market was balanced in terms of supply and demand, and consequently there were stable prices. With recent developments in both supply and demand, there needs to be a rebalance in the market. Given China's relationship with Australia, I think that it would be interesting for China to have as many alternatives as possible. China remains heavily dependent on Australia for iron ore, having imported 60% of its total from down under for at least the past 6 years, about 20% coming from Brazil, according to Chinese customs figures. Just before 2020 ended, however, the Chinese Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIIT, advanced its diversification ambitions by announcing a 5-year reform plan that included many investments in overseas iron ore mines and increasing scrap-based steelmaking. The ministry also called for diversification into alternative sources of steelmaking metals, including manganese and chromium. China will accelerate the construction of large iron ore projects in West Africa and Western Australia, the MIIT said, adding that cooperation would also be strengthened with resource-rich Russia, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, Cambodia, and other neighbouring countries. The sector could look into mines in Southeast Asia, Central Asia, and Africa to create more effective supplies of raw materials as soon as possible. Alongside diversification, China has also sought to cool its demand. Minister for Industry and Information Technology, Zai Xiang, at the 2021 National Industry and Information Work Conference last month, asked the steel industry to resolutely reduce its output in 2021. But China's main pathways to diversifying its iron ore supply by using more scrap steel, opening new mines overseas, and finding new import sources and increasing domestic production of iron ore are stacked with hurdles, analysts say. Few have faith that the world's largest steelmaking nation will be able to dissolve its reliance on its current suppliers, particularly Australia, by 2025, the end of the MIIT's newly announced five-year plan. To displace the current level of imports through investments in new production is simply not realistic, especially within 5 years, CRU Group iron ore analyst Eric Hegborn said. Kim Christie, a senior analyst with energy research firm Wood Mackenzie, echoed that sentiment. China currently has a reliable source of good quality, low-cost ore from Australia and Brazil, and for at least the next 5 years, we do not expect this will change. China's forecast steel output for 2021 is a whopping 1.065 billion tons, according to the Metallurgical Industry Planning and Research Institute. Typically, one ton of steel requires at least 1.5 tons of iron ore, so China will need about 1.38 billion tons of iron ore to support its expected 240 million tons of locally mined ore to produce its target steel volumes. This means that based on current contribution rates, Australia will likely supply around 700 million to 800 million tons of iron ore to China this year, while Brazil will supply about 300 million tons. China's domestic product of iron ore has fallen from a high of 400 million tons in 2014, mainly due to an exit by producers unable to sustain high costs and because of the large emission levels resulting in turning low-grade Chinese ore into material that steel mills can use. Much of the low-grade ore needs to be blended with high-grade feed from Brazil to be steel mill ready. Ramping up local production, therefore, appears to be a dead end, analysts say. China can and does increase domestic production when required, but local mines are typically small, high-cost operations, so prices need to be sufficiently high to incentivize domestic producers. At current prices, Chinese domestic production is economical, but once prices fall below $80 a ton, most domestic production rates are uneconomic, Christie said. An obvious option is for China to sign deals with new exporters or operate new mines in overseas locations, as Salvador alluded to. And China has already got a head start, with state-owned enterprises wrapping up a deal involving parts of the world's largest untapped iron ore deposit, the massive Simandou mine in West Africa's Guinea, that boasts billions of tons of high-grade iron ore. China has interest in both the northern and southern blocks of the reserve. However, getting Simandou up and running requires the construction of new large-scale production facilities and logistics that will take time, and it is likely to run into hiccups, like most big mining projects do, analysts warn. And the government of Guinea has aimed high, vowing to bring two northern blocks into production by around 2025, but Wood Mackenzie's Christie was not optimistic about the Guinean government's gumption. We don't expect the first tons to be shipped from Simandou, assuming it goes ahead until at least 2026-28 at the earliest, she said. Like most greenfield iron ore projects, the lead time is several years. Most projects in Africa are greenfield in nature, politically risky, and requires massive capital expenditure. This is not a short-term solution. And even if it does roar to life in 2025, Simandou's maximum capacity is about 150 million tonnes a year, so it would only make up a small proportion of the global market share dominated by Australia and Brazil. China's other overseas investments outside Simandou, such as Sino Iron and Carrara in Australia, the Tongkili mine in Sierra Leone, and Marcona in Peru can contribute a combined total of about 45 million tons a year. As for China's ambition to find more new mines, IHS Markit's global research lead for coal, metals and mining, Dr. James Stevenson, warned that it could take years for permits and licenses to be issued, especially in countries with stringent environmental checklists. It will be very difficult for miners to start digging iron ore out of new greenfield projects by 2025, though it might be plausible in the longer term. The more developed the country, the longer it tends to take. In places like Australia, miners can take up to 5 years to secure the proper paperwork, Stevenson said. An environmental impact statement alone can take about 18 months or more. China, however, has a higher chance of weaning off part of its dependency on foreign iron ore by increasing scrap-based steelmaking, according to price reporting agency Davis Index CEO Sean Davison. The MIIT, in its reforms, aims to push up its annual domestic steel scrap usage to 300 million tonnes by 2025 from the current consumption of roughly 240 million tonnes, and has promised to ensure that steel production from scrap-dependent electric arc furnaces, or EAF, accounts for 20% of total annual production as part of its diversification plans. Steel in China is mostly produced using predominantly oxygen processes in coal-based blast furnaces. Davison said these goals are not unrealistic, particularly given that 13% of steel is already EAF-produced steel in China, and using an additional 60 million tons of scrap is not outside the realm of possibility. It needs to coincide with shutdowns of blast furnace steelmaking, of course, he says. New EAF plants are relatively inexpensive to construct, he added, but the costs could add up if current blast furnaces are also retired. If China were to build more EAFs and surmount those rising costs, Davin said it could be a breeze for the country to reach 300 million tons in scrap consumption in 5 years. But while there is plenty of scrap metal in China, it will be difficult to transport it from far-flung parts of the country to the processing plants on the coast and then to steel mills, Davison said. Again, time is crucial in surmounting these hurdles. At the moment, it is cost prohibitive to process the large tonnes of scrap that sits further from the coast, he said, so the delivered mill cost after you factor in freight is very high. In the coming years, that won't be the case, and that will make domestic scrap more margin friendly. But there may also be a need to import more scrap, but China is ahead in this respect after lifting a 2-year ban on imports on January the 1st, Davison said. But even with scrap-based steelmaking, iron ore will still be needed, he warned. For good steel, scrap mixed with pig iron, the intermediary between iron ore and steel, is crucial. So looking purely at China's goal to diversify away from Australia, Brazil's Vale could also potentially squeeze out an additional 100 million tonnes of iron ore to replace Australia's shipments if it resumes peak performance and forges on with expansion plans. But that remains to be seen, Salvador said. So adding up the potential alternative sources of iron ore, China could potentially replace 300 million to 350 million tonnes of Australian iron ore, but not in the short term. And even then, it would be less than half of what Australia is now supplying. So as a result, analysts say, China will remain reliant on Australia's iron ore for many years to come. And so it seems that the Australian economy will be buttressed for some time by those iron ore exports. But, in my view, we should be actively exploring other markets because this deadly iron ore embrace with China may not last forever, and our reliance on it at the moment is significant, to say the least. But the question is, will we be smart enough to prepare for a different future, or just exploit the current opportunity? We should do both, but I suspect we may not. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.